Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Welcome to New Books in New York City History, a podcast presented by the Gotham Center for New York City History and for the New Books Network. My name is Jesse Hoffman-Garskoff, and I am a professor at the University of Michigan in the Departments of History and American Culture and in the program in Latino Studies. Today, I'll be talking with Professor Edgardo Melendez about his new book, Patria, Puerto Rican Revolutionary Exiles in 19th Century New York. It was published by Centro Press in 2019. Dr. Melendez is a professor emeritus in the Department of Africana and Puerto Rican Latino Studies and at Hunter College. He also taught for many years in the Department of Political Science at the University of Puerto Rico, Río Piedras. He is the author of many books on Puerto Rican politics, parties, and the question of status. His publications are too many to list, but include Sponsored Migration, The State and Postwar Puerto Rican Migration to the United States, which was published by the Ohio State University Press in 2017. Puerto Rican Government and Politics, A Comprehensive Bibliography, which was named an outstanding academic title by Choice in 2000. Professor Melendez, it's a great pleasure to meet you and thank you for joining me today.
Thank you, Jesse. The pleasure is mine, really.
So your new book, Patria, Puerto Rican Revolutionary Exiles in 19th Century New York, deals primarily with articles and essays in a single very famous publication. For English-speaking listeners, what does the word patria mean, and how would you describe the newspaper that was called Patria in New York in the late 19th century?
That's a very good question. In the preface, I have several pages explaining it in the text. I mean, the book has two parts. The second part is documents taken from Patria, dealing in several matters dealing with Puerto Rican issues, right? Written by Puerto Rican authors or dealing with Puerto Ricans in New York or the struggle in Puerto Rico. The second part is documents, right? And one decision I had to make was how to translate the word patria, right? I ended up leaving the word in Spanish for several reasons. When the translation came back, and of course, this book is mostly a translation of the of a book that I published about 20 years ago, Patria, Puerto Rico and Patria, right? When the translations came back, Patria was translated in many ways, nation state, homeland, fatherland, country. And I thought that didn't capture the meaning of the word patria for these people, particularly for thinkers like Jose Martí, right? And there's a reason why the newspaper was called Patria. And by the way, in the very first issue of the newspaper, Jose Martí has an article explaining why, right? So Patria is there are two words that I kept in Spanish. One is pueblo, which in the translation was translated as people, but it's not literally people, right? In the 19th century, this thinker didn't use the word nation the way we use it, right? They would use the word pueblo, right? Pueblo was the manifestation of a people, of a group of people joined together by history, culture, language, etc., right? It's the people that constructed the patria. And the patria was a manifestation of the people. The patria was what made a people, manifested the presence of a people in the world, right? And in the way of constructing patria, you would make the revolution and make a republic for that patria. So it's all interrelated, right? So patria, I mean, when I was deciding how to translate, the fatherland has this very chauvinistic meaning, right? Country was not adequate, nation state, no, they didn't use this notion. Motherland, I thought about motherland, but then motherland, homeland, since early in the 21st century had this meaning of the Department of Homeland Security, which is now fatherland. So I say, well, the best thing I could come up with, let's leave the word patria in Spanish, patria and pueblo, right?
So that's great. So thank you. Tell us about the publication itself. So there's the concept of patria is not exactly translatable into English, but has something to do with fatherland, homeland, country, nation. imagine community of imagine national community. So then there's this newspaper. You mentioned Jose Martí. What's Jose Martí's role in creating a newspaper and naming
Jose
it?
Jose Martí has an outstanding presence in all this. Patria is the newspaper founded by Jose Martí, more or less at the same time that he created or was the leading force in the creation of the Partido Revolucionario Cubano, right? The Cuban Revolutionary Party. The main goal of the party was to achieve the independence of Cuba and support the independence of Peru, right? So Patria was, in a sense, the organ, although I don't like to say this, Martí never said that, but it was a way of spreading around, particularly among the Cuban and Puerto Rican community in exile, the voice, the spreading around the idea of, not only the idea of revolution, but how to make it happen, right? So in a sense, it was an ideological instrument of spreading the idea of why would Cubans and Puerto Ricans have to make a revolution, have to gain independence, right? Patria was also an organizer, right? In telling people what to do, in joining forces. And this is one of the most important things that Jose Martí did, right? After the end of the Second War of Independence in 1878, the Cuban forces were spread out, right? In Cuba, in exile, and there were social differences, racial differences, right? Within the Cuban exile community. So what the one thing that Patria was hoping to, right, was to join all these forces in a common goal, the goal of independence. Well, you can go further, the goal of making a patria, right? For which the republic was, an independent republic was an important stepping stone. So Patria would, during Martí's lifetime, right, he would be killed in Cuba in May of 1895. From 1892 to 1895, Martí would be the leading force in this newspaper, right? And the thing that got me to Patria was, of course, I was doing research on the linkages of Cuban and Puerto Rican nationalism at the end of the 19th century, a long time ago. And when I came to Patria, I was really surprised by the vast number of articles dealing with Puerto Rico and written by Puerto Ricans. So that was the genesis for the original book in Spanish, right? Which is basically what had been translated by Centro.
Wonderful. Yeah, one of my next questions was how did you find your way to this part of the project? So just to help listeners a bit, you know, Cuba and Puerto Rico were both colonies of Spain, overseas provinces of Spain at this point, and there were side by side but also interrelated nationalist movements in the two islands. Right. The more effective of which was the Cuban movement, which eventually was led by Martí. So you decided to start looking in this what is basically a classic or the classic text for thinking about Cuban nationalism in the late 19th century, right? Because all of those writings of Martí in Patria get put into his collected works. And so everybody who wants to study the topic of Cuban nationalism can find them. You decided to take a different approach to this text and to think about it as a place to think about Puerto Rican nationalism, but also very early Puerto Rican immigration to New York City, which is really an interesting way of going about it. So tell me a little bit about the process of actually trying to find Puerto Rican materials in Patria, because I think probably many listeners are contemporary historians who think that when you want to look in a text, what you do is you go to a search engine and plug in the words Puerto Rico, Puerto Rican, and other variants, and then you get a bunch of results out. But I don't think that that's the way this happened for you. So tell me about finding this material.
And definitely not 20 years ago, when there was no internet. No, we have to do it. And I think you still have to do it. I don't think there's a Patria, you can have access to Patria.
No, it's not, right? It's not digitized yet.
You have been working on this lately. You have to do it the old-fashioned way. First of all, you have to find a copy of Patria in the U.S. And I did find, I mean, after all, I was in New York City. I found one, Centro had one, the Center for Breaking Story, an old one. Columbia had one. And I got one through the interlibrary loan. Interestingly enough, there were big cuts in all those three copies of Patria, like microfilms of Patria that I got. So that's why I ended up, I had to go to Cuba sometime early 90s, I don't remember, I'm sorry. And I went to the Biblioteca Nacional to get the real Patria, which to my dismay had the same cuts. Apparently they had made the microfilm cut. Anyway. So you have to do it the old-fashioned way. You have to find a copy of the newspaper and go, reel by reel, doing this, which is, I think, why nobody had done this before, right? I mean, before this, there have been several texts from Patria. For example, the collection of articles by Sotero Figueroa, La Verdad de la Historia, has been published before as a text. And a couple of other articles, but most of the articles dealing with Puerto Rico were unknown to the public until I published them. And by the way, not everything dealing with Puerto Rico was published in my book, right? Especially things that were not related to what I was interested in. Now, for the English version, right, this edition that had been published by Centro, when Centro asked me, what about the idea of translating this? I say, well, yeah, you do the translation, that's fine with me. So no problem. But I thought about what can I add to this book that'll be of interest to the public in the US, particularly to Puerto Rican and Latino young people. That is what I was aiming for, right? The main market as a teaching instrument. So the original book has an introduction. This book has part one, which is the old introduction, plus two new chapters dealing with first the history of Puerto Ricans in New York, the history of Puerto Ricans and Cubans in New York before 1898. And another chapter that came to my mind while working on this, what if you use Patria to as a window to what was happening in the community, at least what came out in Patria, right? And that's the last chapter of the introduction. The Puerto Rican and Cuban community through the eyes of Patria, right? And here I deal with meetings by the clubs, right? The Cuban Revolutionary Party was made of clubs. Cubans, Puerto Ricans, and many of them, including both Cubans and Puerto Ricans, right? Cultural events, right? Martí liked to write about things happening in the community. Every issue of Patria included a classified ads section in the last page, right? And that showed me, in a sense, certain aspects of the community. For example, there were ads for professional services, doctors, lawyers, teachers, lodging. And one important thing since the very beginning of Patria, where could people find jobs in tobacco factories, right? And those were kept throughout, at least throughout the early years of Patria under Martí, right? Basically telling Puerto Ricans and Cubans, if you're interested in tobacco, which was perhaps the most important occupation at that time for this exile community, they listed the factories with the addresses. By the way, that's an important thing about Patria. It always included the addresses for the club, for leaders like Jose Martí, you knew where he was living at that time, et cetera, et cetera. So Patria became a source of doing research, of having a view on this community, this exile community, before 1898. And this is important because although the study specifically of the Puerto Rican community has increased dramatically in the last 30, 40 years, the aspect of the history of this community before 1898 still under the belt, right? We still need to do a lot more about the history of Puerto Rican and Cubans before 1898, because there was a presence here before 1898, right? The presence of Puerto Ricans in New York is not a consequence of U.S. imperialism, although, of course, 20th century migration is. But what I mean is there were Puerto Ricans here even before the U.S. took over Puerto Rico. And that's an important, I think it's an important aspect of the history of these people in New York.
Yeah, I'm so in agreement. And I think one of the really wonderful things to highlight about this book is that although it starts out really as a project of thinking about Puerto Rican nationalism and its and how you might think of this classic Cuban text as a source for understanding Puerto Rican nationalism, with the really hard work of thinking about, you know, the amount of work that it takes to read every issue of something that's mostly not about what you're looking for, but has a few things that you are looking for, which I think is the methodology. Like you say, people don't do it because it takes so much work. Why would you read something, you know, that's mostly about Cuba for the few things about Puerto Rico, except that it adds up to a real contribution? But sure. Then I really love the way that you move from there to thinking about this classic text, which is really, I think, oftentimes is imagined really as an intellectual project of Martí's, and situating it in what is really a migration experience, right? That it was correct. Really directed towards a transnational audience, towards Cuba, towards posterity, but it was built on a set of relationships that were happening locally and which he really needed to nurture. And that brings us to, I think, one of these, the really also kind of central and compelling characters who you've already mentioned, which is Sotero Figueroa. Who in addition to being a really important thinker in his own right and was also a very close ally in Martí in producing the newspaper. So tell us about Sotero Figueroa. Who was he and how does he figure into this book?
Well, Sotero Figueroa was many things. He was a typographer. He was a writer. He managed Patria for many years. For many years, while Martí was alive, for many years, Patria was printed in Imprenta America, owned by Jose Martí in New York. The story of Sotero is very interesting. And the story of Sotero Figueroa is one of those mostly unknown stories in Puerto Rico. I think Cubans know more about Sotero because at the end of the war, right, when the U.S. took over Puerto Rico, Sotero Figueroa, like many Puerto Ricans who had been struggling for the independence of Puerto Rico, decided not to go back to colonial Puerto Rico under U.S. rule, right? Eugenio Mara de Hostos, Sotero, Lola Rodriguez, and many others went to live elsewhere. Sotero and Lola Rodriguez went to Cuba, to live in Cuba. So Sotero is a very interesting story. He was a protege of Valdoriotti de Castro, Román Valdoriotti de Castro, the main figure of Puerto Rican 19th century autonomism, right? The founder of the Partido Autonomista Puertorriqueño, the Puerto Rican Autonomist Party in 1886. Now, in reaction to the creation of that party came a vast repression. It's called, in Puerto Rican history, it's called El Año Terrible de 1887, the terrible year of 1887. After this event, many Puerto Rican autonomists, Sotero Figueroa, Pachín Marín, Lola Rodríguez de Tío, left Puerto Rico. And in fact, not only left Puerto Rico, left autonomism and became supporters of independence in New York. And that's how Sotero got to New York City, where, of course, he met other Puerto Ricans and other Cubans, including Jose Martí. And Sotero Figueroa is also important because he was an important member of the party in New York City. He was secretary of the Consejo de Cuerpo of New York, the organizing body of all clubs in New York City. He was a constant presence in the activities of the party. And he was a close ally of Jose Marti, right? So Sotero is a very important figure. And one of the things that really I was proud of is getting the story of Sotero, at least within the pages of Patria, out into the open to Puerto Rican audiences. And Sotero was also an Afro-descendant, which is very important. And I think you did, I got to go over your book in Spanish. Wonderful. I wish I had access to that book before publishing this book. By the way, although this book was published in January 2020, I finished dealing with this in 2017. So there's a lapse of years. Well, this whatever research came during those 3 years, I have no idea.
That makes sense. We all have live in fear of the thing that's going to come out a week after we publish our book. That might have been really useful. I want to pull out one of the articles that you include in the documents collection here, which is something that Sotero Figueroa writes in June of 1894 in response to rumors that are circulating in the city, or at least that, you know, what he sees as rumors. And he says, "Friends of Patria, in order to assuage the rumors, which should not be dismissed merely because they are inclined to debase one's character or distort the rectitude of one's intentions, I feel a personal obligation to make the following declarations." And he makes four, but I'm just going to read the one. "I am not currently the editor-in-chief of Patria, as has been printed, although I will not stop lending my humble support to the newspaper, which is the shining star of our aspirations." And I just wanted to ask you, you know, what you make of this statement. Do you think that Sotero Figueroa actually was the editor-in-chief when Martí was spending all of his time going around and he's just defending himself? Or do you think the accusations are scurrilous?
Well, that specific incident, I'm sorry you asked me about that. That specific incident is one thing I could never clarify. By Martí's own recognition through his letters to Sotero, I know that many times when Martí had to travel throughout the US and Latin America, he was the delegate, right? The main leader of the party. He would leave Sotero in charge of the newspaper. There is testimony of Martí about that. Why would this happen? I could never clarify. Again, this is before Martí was left for Cuba in early 1895. This is before Martí was killed in Cuba. And this is important because Martí's death opened a second stage in the newspaper. And the party itself. That's when the more conservative forces represented by Tomás Estrada Palma, right? Who became president of Cuba, the first president of Cuba under U.S. rule. Oh, well, under the Platt Amendment, I'm sorry. And he was very conservative and pro-annexationist. And that's when the more revolutionary sectors of the party and in the newspaper left the party, including Sotero Figueroa, right? But that incident I'm sorry, I cannot tell you more about this.
But I think what you did answer my question really, because the question was really getting at the fact that he has this very interesting relationship with Martí, which is that he is the person who takes Martí's handwritten ideas. Martí spends his life in his corner of his office scribbling all the time. And Figueroa is the person who he entrusts to take that and to set it in type and make it into this permanent record that we have. And you know, from my own work on these guys, I know that they felt like typesetting was a kind of a sacred act of transforming fleeting written words into history. But it's also clear from this rumor that's spreading around, but also from the letters that you cite by Martí, that Figueroa did have a really important role in actually thinking about the content of Patria. And that helps to explain why he has so many signed articles, you know, which are all include I think, you know, almost all of his signed articles, plus the ones that he wrote with Antonio Vélez Alvarado, who was also a publisher, and Francisco González Marín, who was also a typographer and a poet. Those are all in. And it's just amazing. I mean, I don't think that there's a source in Puerto Rico that could provide you with as clear a vision of late 19th century autonomista turning into nationalist thought as that set of articles that you've published. It's really very helpful.
Correct. And as you mentioned, it's important. There are many articles by Sotero Figueroa who were published unsigned. That, by the way, there were many articles in Patria by Martí that went unsigned. But of course, Cuban researchers have been able to pinpoint which article belonged to Martí. That hasn't happened for Sotero Figueroa. And we know also by Martí's letters that Martí would tell, well, you know, Sotero, I want you to write about this, this for the next number, for the next issue. So, you know, we know that that happened. So the writings of Sotero are still to be defined, right, in terms of what he wrote for Patria, right? But I think it's very important because it gives you a window into an early nationalist thinking that I argue would materialize in Puerto Rico with Pedro Albizu Campos and the Nationalist Party in the 1930s, right? This embryonic nationalism of people thinking about their right to independence in that series of articles with Sotero Figueroa, Vélez Alvarado, and Marín, La Dominación e Independencia. There is this thinking about the right of self-determination, what we would in the 20th century call the right of self-determination. So it's for me, it was like discovering all this vast source of things that I had no idea when I initially did this research that came out in this book. And of course, at that time, I was trying to highlight the linkages between Puerto Rican and Cuban nationalism, which is important in Puerto Rico's history, right? Because there is this tendency of emphasizing nationalism in Puerto Rico, right? Without connecting how these people, forced by history and migration or forced by common ideological schemes, were already thinking of a broader regional movement. For example, I discuss in the book, and this is a topic that's been widely known for a while, that Puerto Rican leaders like Ramón Emeterio Betances and Rogelio Mar de Hostos coincided with José Martí in this idea of an Antillean confederation, right? Independence was not only to achieve independence for Puerto Rico on this place and Cuba on the other side, but there was a posterior goal of creating this regional entity of the Antilles. And not only a regional entity based on common historical and cultural and ideological factors, but also a political factor. For Martí and Betances and Hostos, it was as an obstacle, a wall to stop U.S. imperialism. Right, and some of the most important writings of Martí in Patria was precisely arguing this. Right, this is not only our cause; this is the cause of Latin America and the world. Because if the U.S. takes over Cuba and Puerto Rico, which it did, it's gonna move forward in its goal of building an empire, and so it did, as we know. Right. So it's amazing what you could find in the page of this news, very little newspaper, by the way, which for many people, for me for a long time, was an unknown source of history.
So yeah, this is wonderful. So the newspaper is founded in March and April of 1892, edited by Martí and with help from Figueroa for about 3 years. And then, as you mentioned before, Martí left New York, went to join the fighting in Cuba, and by May of 1895, so really 3 years after the founding, he's dead in battle. And then by June of that year, Patria, the folks in New York, finally are willing to confirm the rumors of his death, because of course the Spanish have been spreading rumors of the death of Cuban leaders for years, and not everybody believes them. So I noticed that Figueroa's eulogy was on the front page of Patria and the day that the newspaper. So what does it mean that a Puerto Rican of African descent was able to secure this pride of place in this movement at this moment? What does that say about the movement?
That's one of the articles in Patria that really got to me. It remains one of my favorite writings on that. Well, that had many implications. First of all, it's not completely known when did the people in New York found out about Martí's death. So it took a while for them, not only to confirm that he was there, but also how to make the world know about his death. So that's why it took over a month for Patria, which basically was the official announcement of Martí's death. And the fact that the front page article in big headlines was Immortal by Sotero Figueroa. And that writing is very important because as many experts on Martí has stated already, in this article, Sotero is capable of finding those aspects of Martí that came to be things that remaining in posterity about Martí's quality, right? This concept that Sotero explains here of aunar voluntades, the best translation I could find is joining wills, the joining of wills, right? How he was able to join all forces of exile. It's very interesting. And the other thing is, I think this is one of the last issues of the newspaper where the old mighty sector of the party and the newspaper was able to polish an issue, right? Right after Martí's death, Sotero Figueroa following Rafael Serra, which you talk about a lot, the president of La Liga, and others created this other newspaper called La Doctrina de Martí. And it's interesting is that these Afro-descendant sectors in the party are the ones trying to keep Martí's thought from being polluted and diminished by the new conservative forces that took over the party and the newspaper party. So, it's very clear that this issue is very important. This issue in general is very important, right? And this article is very important too. There's another article by Jose, it's a news clipping describing one of the meetings of the party afterwards. And there is this, how you call it, the presentation of Sotero Figueroa's speech. This is the event where Estrada Palma is being named secretary of the party. And most of Sotero Figueroa's speech is honoring Jose Martí, right? And as truly the lighting guide of the party and the newspaper. So, and this is very important. For Sotero Figueroa, Rafael Serra, many others, the party was a Martiano party. The newspaper originally was a Martiano, and the main thing was to keep the ideas of Martí about the struggle and about the Republic in vogue. And one important idea was the Republic for all. That is, that no social class, that no specific racial group was going to take over the Republic. The Republic was there to foment the prosperity of all Cubans, despite their differences. And of course, as we know, that didn't go well with the new leadership. And by the other way, the other important idea from Martí that went down the window the moment Estrada Palma took the party was to keep the U.S. out of the Cuban struggle, right? Because as Martí and others thought about it, right? Once the U.S. intervenes in the Cuban War, that's the end of a real Cuban independence. And by the way, that's what happened after 1898, as we know, right?
So, in a sort of sad way, that wonderful piece, which in some ways is the kind of the pinnacle of this whole story of the eulogy for Martí, also marks the end of a period And after 1895, Patria ceases to be as interesting a source for the kinds of things that you're looking at for. There's much less discussion of Puerto Rico by Cuban writers, but also the most important Puerto Rican writers are no longer included in the redacción, in the editorial decisions. And so Sotero Figueroa in particular has to find other places to publish his work, which he does.
In Cuban, Jordan,
there is one really, I think, beautiful piece from after that period, which is the eulogy that Francisco Gonzalo Marin wrote for his brother Wenceslao, right?
Oh yeah.
So tell us about that piece, because I think it's really the highlight of that second period of, you know, I don't know how he got it in, but they put it in and it was worth it.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's one that's another of my favorite texts in Patria. Francisco Gonzalo Marin is a well-known poet from Arecibo, Puerto Rico. He moved to New York after 1887, and of course he joined the independence forces of Cuba and Puerto Rico there. This piece is very heartwarming. He is narrating how he met his brother Wenceslao in New York, right? He was selling newspapers or looking for subscriptions to one of the newspapers he was publishing. He published many. And he found his brother working in a tobacco factory. And he was surprised that Wenceslao was in New York, right? Now he's writing this sometime after he got the news that his brother was killing Cuba, fighting for the independence of Cuba, right? So he is filled with all this guilt, because as he explains in this extremely well-written piece, he felt guilty that he installed this independence fervor in his brother, in his younger brother. And that's because he went to fight in Cuba. So he is expressing not only his love for his brother, but trying to, I don't know, put out his guilt of what are the consequences of the struggle for independence, right? And by the way, of course, many people know, Pasín Marín went to Cuba. And he served for a while under the staff of Máximo Gómez, and he died in Cuba like his brother. So in a sense, is foretelling also the story of this brilliant poet, Puerto Rican poet also. That for me is also one of my favorite writings. Pasín Marín is a poet and writer, so. Let me tell you something, Jesse. I have done many books. I have done many research on many topics. But I always say that this specific research is one I have enjoyed the most, simply because I wasn't reading documents on migration from this and that office or a document from the U.S. government. I was reading poetry in verse. I was reading people like Jose Martí, Sotero Figueroa, Pasín Marín, Lola Rodríguez de Tioso. I mean, I said, wow, man, this is really nice. I wish all my projects could be like this. Of course, the hard work comes after, right? Trying to do all this stuff about producing a book. But it was really, really an interesting research for me. And of course, after 20 years, Centro Press, and I have to acknowledge Centro Press for publishing the book in English, right? Without Centro Press, they were the ones that got the people in Puerto Rico, the translation program in Puerto Rico, at the University of Puerto Rico in Rio Piedras, to do all the translation. And that, my friend, is a titanic job. I would have never done that, because you're translating not only great writers like Jose Martí, but also the 19th century Spanish is very different from our Spanish. I mean, I was born and raised in Puerto Rico, so Spanish is my original language. And I sometimes had trouble reading that Spanish, and particularly Martí, which liked to construct all these complex sentences. I mean, it's beautiful Spanish, but man, I said, no, I cannot do this translation work. So my kudos to the translator. They did a hell of a job in putting all this available to the English-speaking readers.
And I think that that's a such important work, because I knew the book in Spanish. It was really helpful to me. But of course, I'm someone who has a PhD in Latin American history and study these things, right? So I knew how useful this work that had been done to kind of recover this amazing material from this difficult to access original resource. But now the book is translated, and it's of all these amazing stories and pieces that we've been talking about, and that I think are not just interesting for the researcher, but also for readers. Are available to English readers and to high school teachers and to college teachers who are teaching students who may be Puerto Rican or Latino on the mainland, but whose English will be the language that they're most comfortable working in.
Let me just say one more thing, Jesse. Although this book is supposed to be about Puerto Ricans, I think the heaviest presence is that of José Martí. There's a lot of articles by José Martí. There's a section on the party, right, which coincides with the struggles of both Cubans and Puerto Ricans. And there are other sections dealing with Puerto Rico. Let me just say one thing, except for the article on the El Tercer Año del Partido Revolucionario Cubano, most of the other articles by Martí had not been translated into English. José Martí has been translated, but mostly in literature and poetry. So even for people interested in reading José Martí in English, this book will offer a window into many articles that appear in Patria that have not been translated into English so far. So it's a book not only about Puerto Ricans, but about Cubans, and particularly about this specific Cuban, José Martí.
Well, I think that's a great place to close. So once again, the book we're talking about is Patria, Puerto Rican Revolutionary Exiles in 19th Century New York, which is published by Centro Press, by Edgardo Meléndez. But you can also look for Sponsored Migration, The State and Postwar Puerto Rican Migration to the United States, which came out only a few years earlier, and many other publications by Professor Meléndez. Professor Edgardo Meléndez, I want to thank you so much for sharing your work with me and with our audience today.
My thank you to you, Jesse. It's been a pleasure.